Welcome to Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. Utah Foundation has invited candidates of the 2nd Congressional District special election to speak with Thomas Young. In these interviews, Thomas will ask the same 6 questions relating to how these candidates hope to address the issues most important to Utah voters. In this edition of Utah Thrives, Thomas Young speaks with Libertarian candidate Brad Green.
Hey, thanks for coming on, Brad.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's an honor.
The Utah Foundation, every 4 years, does a survey of Utah voters' priorities. And, you know, throughout the years, priorities have fluctuated, right? Sometimes it's jobs and the economy taking the top spot, and sometimes it's taxes and spending. Other times it's public education, and other times it's healthcare. All right, so first question. Among other things, some voters in early 2020 were up in arms about the state legislature making changes to ballot initiatives from a couple years before. That wouldn't specifically affect you in Congress, but should you be concerned about whether voters think that you listen to them?
I do think people get up in arms when the legislature changed the ballot initiative process, and I know that because in 2020, I believe, was the year where we had the sales tax initiative, when they were trying to put sales tax on food. And I was part of that referendum process. And I organized it in Iron County. It's my understanding that we got 3 times the number of signatures that was needed from our county. And so we were able to compensate for less signatures in other counties. And the legislature, what has commonly happened after any referendum is they've said, well, there were some things that we think made this too easy or weren't clear enough. And so they continued to make it harder and more expensive to run referendums. They want the sole legislative power of the state, which is kind of okay if people are totally willing to throw out their legislators, which they haven't been. And then they started shortening the timeframes. Like, I know that they ran a referendum to stop the legislature. I don't know if it was last year or early this year about the state flag thing. And they only had like 3 weeks to do it. And it was, you know, they needed like 120,000 signatures. You just can't do that unless you're already extremely perfectly organized, and citizens don't organize that quickly. And so that one failed, and now they have a different one and they have months to do it. And so those timelines create a crunch and makes it more difficult. And then even after you get a referendum to succeed, the legislature comes in and they change what you referendumed anyway. I think there was a Medicare Part D referendum. I wasn't involved with that, but I have heard a lot of people complain that the legislature just went in and changed it after the citizens went to all the effort. And so do I think it's important for politicians to clarify, to help people understand the bills better? Yes. Do I think the people are going to vote ignorantly, not fully understanding what's in the voter proposals? Absolutely. We can't all know everything all the time. And that's the reason why representative government is what the founders set up for us. But in the instance when the representative government isn't getting the job done, the people need some kind of recourse before they go to get their guns, right? There has to be some way to change things other than shooting everybody. And so that's where the concept of recall elections came from. Really, that's where the concept of elections came from. The founders talked about our elections as being a revolution that happened every 2 years peacefully. And we, the people, need to recognize that and use that better.
All right. So the president of the Utah Foundation thinks that housing affordability might be at the top of the 2024 Utah Priorities Project. What, if anything, can you in Congress do about the issue? What does housing affordability mean to you? And what does homeownership mean to you? But your thoughts.
That's a three-part question. In my local advocacy, which is really what I've done for the last 20 years, is I've been fighting at the local level. And this is my hot button issue at the local level, more so than taxes, is homeownership affordability. And here's what homeownership means to me. Homeownership means to me the ability for your name to be on title, ownership, actual tangible property rights ownership of a place that provides you shelter from the elements. I don't care if that's a condo. I don't care if that's a blank piece of land where you park your trailer. That's home ownership. If you own it, nobody can come to you at the end of the month and say you have to pay a bunch of money. Now, property taxes make that more difficult, but that's difficult for everybody. And so that's a separate battle. So as far as housing affordability, apartments create affordable housing. Well, closer to affordable, but they don't create home ownership. And what you get with home ownership is a stable society. When somebody owns the property that they live on, they're stable in the community. They're going to try and have a job in the community, and they're going to do what they need to do to support that community, because that community is where they have ownership. And so if somebody is polluting the community, if somebody is creating violence or causing problems in the community, they're going to be willing to fight to defend the community because they have ownership in it, because they have their own property there. I have properties all over the state, so there's lots of communities that I have interest in, and I try and advocate in all of those areas because I'm trying to protect my ability to do the things that sustain my family. Now, as far as affordability goes, there's two elements that I think make housing expensive in modern day United States. The number one biggest thing is taxes. Think about how much nicer home you could have if your income were twice as big as it is, or if your expenses were half as big as they are. You see, because business taxes increase the cost of everything you buy, and income taxes and capital gains taxes and every other kind of tax applied to money that's either coming in or earned, those reduce the amount of money that you get to spend. And you can either spend it, you can only spend it once. And so there's two ways to improve your lifestyle: spend less or earn more. And so if you were able, every little bit of taxes that you're able to reduce increases the lifestyle for everybody, whether they're on fixed income, whether they're poor, whether they're wealthy, it increases everybody by reducing taxes. And in the United States of America, they say that the studies show that 60 to 70% from the very bottom all the way to the top 1%, basically, all of them on average are paying something like 70% in taxes based upon either an expense or an income model. So either it's coming out of their pay or they're paying too much for their stuff. 70%. Imagine if even half of that, 35% more income, would affect your life in a big way. 35% less expenses would affect my life in a big way. So that's number one. Number two, in the state of Utah especially, we have become extremely authoritarian when it comes to use of property. We only allow people to use property the way that we want them to use property, as long as none of their neighbors oppose how they use property. But it's their property. And property ownership has a meaning, but definitely in Utah, you can't use your property unless you get permission and unless you follow the specific rules. And I'm going to give you one fun example, because it really radicalized me about home ownership. So there is a local contractor in Iron County that had saved up money. He went on the Dave Ramsey plan. He lived cheap for years and years, and he saved up money to build his own house. And he thought, well, because I'm using my own money, I don't need a bank. And because I don't need a bank, I don't have to have the same insurance. And so I can build my house out of cash flow, and nobody can tell me how to do it, because nobody is making me sign that I'm going to follow specific codes, or that I'm going to have specific fire protections. I'm going to do it the best possible. And instead of spending money on permits and inspections, I'm just going to build my house the way that I want. And he bought his own property way out in the county. He bought 20 acres. He got a permit for a well, because he figured that a well affected other people and water rights. You know, that's important. And so he got a permit, drilled a well, put in a well pump, and then he put in water tanks for his own water system. He put in solar panels for his own power, and he built his own house without a permit, and it is the coolest house I've ever seen. It has everything imaginable that you think would be the highest quality. Iron County, Utah charged him criminally with criminal nuisance because he built without a permit. And I called the county attorney and said, this is absurd. How are you going to enforce that? And he says, we hope not to. He really should just let us inspect it and pay a fine and the permit. And I said, he doesn't want you snooping around his property. Why is he going to trust you? And they said, well, that's the rule. We have to bring him into compliance. State law says we have to, and the commissioners have ruled that means we have to be proactive. I talked to the commissioners. We're still not on speaking terms. They said, well, there are going to be bad people out there trying to do bad things. I said, well, that isn't the case here. And they said, well, we have to apply it equally to everybody. So after about a month of trying to get a political solution, my friend, he said, fine, I surrender. What do I have to do? And he let county inspectors walk through his house, which he feels is a deep violation of his privacy. And then he paid a fine and a permit, and they gave him a certificate of occupancy. And he framed it. He put it on the wall. He said, this was the most expensive part of my house, given that it's just a piece of paper. Like, this is the most absurd, expensive, non-essential part of my house. And the inspector even said it was one of the highest quality houses he'd ever seen. My friend had hired private inspectors who work for the county when their inspectors are on holiday, and they wouldn't accept their inspections. That increases the cost of our houses. All of the rules, all of the inspections, all of the permits, in my opinion, probably increases the cost of our housing two or three times. And I think that housing could be, if you consider how much taxes takes out of our pay and how much added burden adds to our housing, housing could be 6 to 8 times cheaper in practicality if government would butt out.
You're picking more than a few fights with that. With it, right?
I am a fighter. Now, what can I do about that in Congress? Probably nothing. I can use the bully pulpit, which is pretty effective. I mean, there could be a homeowner's bill of rights. There's things that could be done. I generally think that that's not Congress's role. It's not in the Constitution. But certainly a congressman could be a very effective advocate for proper governance. And I would definitely be that.
Oh, makes sense. So we're almost out of time. I want to ask you one other question. Would you support more federal spending to get through a recession, paid for through tax increases?
This is going to be an easier question for me because I covered a lot of ground in the last question. Increasing government spending to get out of a recession is like standing in a bucket and picking yourself up by the handle. It just doesn't work. The reason why we are in recession area is because the government has spent too much. You think about the people you know, as when recessions happen and as things are transpiring right now, people are doing what we call tightening our belt. We're cutting our expenses. We're lowering what our lifestyle is. And we're trying to work harder and earn more money. And what's happening right now is that the government has not restrained itself. You look at any measurement of government over the last 100 years, and you will find that while they may have reduced what their projected increase was going to be, government never reduces the size of their spending unless they're absolutely forced to. And those cases are very few and far between. And again, imagine if we had 35% or 50% more money in our lifestyle as a result of less taxes, less government. And imagine if we had less regulation keeping us down. A recession would be some other problem. It would be a government spending problem. Maybe government can't spend as much because there's less expendable tax money coming in. Government caused the problem by spending, and spending more is only going to make it bigger and worse. We need austerity measures. That's what they call it in Europe. We need to put the government on the Dave Ramsey plan. And right now we have spendaholics throughout government and realistically throughout the populace. People want government to spend on them and they want to take it from their neighbor. And we need to shut that down. When government shuts down, it just shuts down non-essential services. I find myself saying, well, why wouldn't we just keep those shut down all the time? That sounds like a Dave Ramsey plan to me. Let's do that. You want to stop a recession, you need to shut down government, a lot of the services, rein it back in, and cut its spending back to more sustainable levels so that the people are free and wealthy, not the government.
Well, you're not going to make friends with that one within the Beltway.
I'm not, if you elect me, I'm not there to make friends. I'm there to make freedom.
Well, it's good. I appreciate your time and good luck with the race. Any final thoughts?
You know, I have three main points, and they're fairly well articulated, so I'll throw them out really quickly. I think what we really need our candidates or our representatives to be addressing is we need to get rid of the income tax from the federal level. Go back to where they have to ask the states for money. That's number one. Number two, we need to restore federal lands in the western states. the states need to be able to self-govern. It's actually written in the Constitution. People don't know it. They don't fight for it. Utah is poor because of it. And the third thing is we need to enforce co-equal branches of government by making the legislature actually do their job so that they don't make the judicial decide the hard battles for them. They do it themselves, and they can rein in the executive branch and actually represent the people, because that's why they got the most power. We should wield that power to represent the people and make them free again.
Very nice. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
You have been listening to Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. To learn more about the Utah Priorities Project and what issues are most important to Utah voters, please visit utahfoundation.org.